Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war. Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. Our guest today has been described as the queen of American nursing, and I'll allow her to introduce herself.
Well, hello, I'm Melanie Dreyer. I'm a dean of nursing at University of Iowa and an anthropologist as well as a nurse.
Yes, ma'am. As a doctor, a learned individual, after now decades of experience, I want you to take us back to the beginning. As I understand it, you started some of your research in Jamaica back in the 70s. Tell us about that.
Well, that's correct. Actually, I think it was 1969 when I began my first study of chronic marijuana use in Jamaica. And the purpose of that study was to test what had become a kind of theory in the United States about a motivational syndrome. And the idea was that, that proposed in the United States, was that if you smoked a lot of marijuana, the tendency was to become amotivated, that is, to drop out, lose your ambition, not for students, it was a matter of not continuing in school and that sort of thing. And I, as an anthropologist, I wanted to test whether, in fact, that theory also would explain behavior in another culture in which marijuana was smoked pretty commonly, in fact, very commonly. So I went to Jamaica in the beginning to see, in fact, whether the amotivational syndrome theory held up in another culture.
And what were your findings, ma'am?
Well, it was quite a comprehensive study of working class men in three different communities. And interestingly, in Jamaica, where marijuana is not defined as a drug, men actually used marijuana to make them work harder. They used it in the way we would use a coffee break, where you would be working, then take a little break, perhaps feel a bit fatigued, sit down, take a little break, have a cup of coffee, and then feel good about going back to work. And The men that I worked with in Jamaica used marijuana exactly like that. They were cane workers, farmers, truck drivers, as I say, working class men. They worked very hard, and if they needed a little break, they would sit down, smoke a marijuana cigarette, and then feel refreshed and go back to work again. So what we had was the same substance defined in two different ways in two different cultures, and used for almost opposite purposes.
I have not made it to Jamaica, but I can tell you this. Some of the hardest working people in America, in particular people like framers and roofing crews and folks like that, tend to take very similar breaks for a little marijuana pick-me-up, if you will, and get back to work very hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to have that effect. It was actually quite remarkable. Of course, these were men who smoked every day and fairly consistently through the day, perhaps in the morning, then on breaks, and then at night when the men would come home and go down to the river and maybe have a bath and sit with their friends for a while to discuss the day, not unlike men stopping in a bar on the way home and having a beer together in our own culture, would sit down at the river and have another cigarette, and at that point it would help them relax. So Jamaicans would define marijuana, or ganja as they call it, as a substance, an herb, that in fact helps you do what you want to do better.
Now,
so, Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Insofar as ganja use by the women, and particularly by pregnant women, let's talk about that, please.
Sure. Subsequent to the study of chronic marijuana use in working-class men, at the time that I first went to Jamaica in the late 60s and early 70s, women were using marijuana tea. Men were smoking marijuana. So women were using it, but in a different form, and I wanted to explore that use. And women were also giving it to their mates and to their children, giving the tea to their mates and children to help them increase their appetites, get over any little sickness, help them work harder, sleep better, and so forth. By the time I had completed that study and gone back to Jamaica, I found that increasing numbers of women were actually smoking marijuana. Not very many, because it's still a pretty much male-dominated activity. But there were increasing numbers of women, particularly women who were in the Rastafarian sect, which uses ganja as a sacrament. And I was interested in looking at these women who smoked during pregnancy to see whether, in fact, their prenatal exposure to marijuana had any impact on childbirth, on the neonatal outcomes, and ultimately into school performance. So the first study that we did was funded by the March of Dimes Foundation to look simply at prenatal exposure and neonatal outcomes. And we found that we had 30 children who were exposed, 30 unexposed. Mothers were matched for socioeconomic status and for parity, that is the number of pregnancies that they had had previous to this child, and age. And we found no differences at 3 days post-delivery. At 1 month, and these were all breastfeeding mothers, at 1 month, we found, interestingly, that the children of the exposed children, the children of the ganja-smoking mothers, actually performed better on every one of our neurobehavioral, the dimensions of our neurobehavioral test, which was the Braselton test. So we, this was, you know, completely counterintuitive, and we did some more in-depth work to find out why this might occur. And we can't attribute those differences to smoking ganja, but we can attribute it to the capacity of these ganja-using mothers to create a better sort of neonatal environment for growth and development than the mothers who were not smoking ganja. So it's a fairly complex explanation for those results, and I would not attribute them to simply the smoking themselves. But the bottom line for that study is that there seemed to be no inherent danger or problem in smoking marijuana during pregnancy. Now, I will say that the women in our study only used marijuana during pregnancy. They did not smoke cigarettes. They might have had an occasional beer, maybe, you know, two a month at the most. They didn't drink alcohol, and they didn't use other drugs. So we really had a very clean kind of sample, which is much more difficult to get in the United States, as you can imagine.
Now, let's go forward a few decades. As I understand it, scientists over the last few years have determined that cannabinoids or endocannabinoids actually interact with our brain and can have positive functions. Can you tell us more about
sure.
that?
Sure. I think the discovery of endocannabinoids has been a very important discovery because we know that our body produces these cannabinoids called endocannabinoids, and they help us do many things. They help us to forget. They help us to sleep better. They help us to eat more. And so that I think with the discovery that we are naturally producing these things that help us, and helping us to forget is a very useful thing. If we had to remember every single thing that we encountered, every stimulus that we faced, you can imagine how distracted we would be. So the discovery that endocannabinoids help us forget and to focus on certain information that's coming into our brain, I thought was a very a groundbreaking discovery. And it really confirmed what Jamaican parents have been telling me for decades, which is that with a little marijuana tea, their children are able to concentrate better in school. And often parents will be sure to prepare a marijuana tea for a child when they're sitting for exams that will determine whether they can go on to a good high school or not. So that, again, Jamaican sort of folk use of this as medicine, which they've arrived at by trial and error, is increasingly becoming confirmed by scientific evidence, which is it's quite fun to watch.
Now, I want to remind the listeners that they're listening to Cultural Baggage. Our guest today is Nurse Melanie Dreyer. She is the Dean of the University of Iowa College of Nursing. What do you make of this recent Supreme Court ruling? What does the American Nurses Association think of medical marijuana?
Well, the American Nurses Association, like many national organizations, many have endorsed the medical use of marijuana. We also, of course, the Institute of Medicine did a report that, although somewhat equivocal, really the bottom line was that there does appear to be medical value to marijuana, and that greater research, more research needs to be done. I think the Supreme Court ruling had more to do with a position on states' rights and federalism than it did on marijuana per se.
Have you had the chance to go back to Jamaica in the last few years to do any follow-ups?
Well, actually, I have two research assistants working in Jamaica as we speak, doing a follow-up on the children who were in the original Jamaican prenatal study. So it's very exciting to see now what these young people are doing and to see whether, in fact, there is any permanent difference between these two groups that could be truly attributed to marijuana exposure in the prenatal period.
Now, there's research being done, particularly in Israel, that shows use of cannabinoids immediately following a stroke helps to cut down brain swelling and so forth. Why does the United States fail to address these situations? Why do we disallow those type of studies?
Oh, I think every culture has its substances that it endorses and thinks is wonderful, and then it has its substances that are, frankly, demonized way beyond their capacity. And it's almost historical. In the United States, marijuana, if you look at some of the early stuff on reefer madness and all that sort of thing, that it's just one of those substances that has acquired a value for people in positions of power to denigrate. So, and to make illegal and to develop a whole system of law enforcement and a juridical legal system around it that probably has some economic advantages for certain people. I think that it's a cultural issue. You know, it's like not being able to drink alcohol in Pakistan, but you can take other kinds of substances. So these are cultural issues, and they get confused with scientific issues. So we know, for example, the deleterious effects of alcohol. We know that, certainly know the deleterious effects of smoking. We're bombarded with it every day. We certainly know the effects of both of those substances when they're consumed during pregnancy, and yet those two substances are legal while marijuana is illegal. Now, why should that be? It has nothing to do with the science or our understanding. It has everything to do with the culture, our belief systems, the way we were raised, and our conceptualization of marijuana as a drug rather than a medicine.
Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Melanie Dreyer, the Dean of Nursing at University of Iowa. Melanie, any closing thoughts you'd like to relay to my audience?
Well, I think that the thought I would like to relay is to be thoughtful. Set aside for a minute all the things that we have been told about how terrible this substance is, and to open up our minds to hear the other side of the story and to learn the experience of other cultures in redefining a substance that is a drug in our culture as a medicine or a sacrament in another culture, and not to automatically assume that just because someone is using marijuana or administering marijuana to their family members, that this is necessarily a bad thing. So I would just ask us to be more open-minded and to listen to the evidence.
Very good, ma'am. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
D.D. Zoratek from Ohio has reflex sympathy dystrophy. It's characterized as a never-ending cycle of the fight-or-flight syndrome of the central nervous system. RSD is incurable, incapacitating, and unstoppable. Dee Dee and her husband Joe were busted for growing the one plant that best alleviates her symptoms, medical marijuana.
The day of the bust, well, I showed up at the house, and about 5 minutes after I got there, the police arrived. At the time, I didn't know why they showed up or anything. They came into the house and, uninvited, started looking around, just found one marijuana pipe and placed us under arrest. You know, after I refused to let them search the house, they went and got a warrant, went through our house, and I had a small cabinet with some plants growing, and we were arrested for cultivation and subsequently charged, you know, with everything, trafficking, child endangerment, possession, cultivation, criminal tools, and all that.
But it's representative of so many Americans. Every 40 seconds, someone has to endure that arrest for marijuana.
You know, my experience in jail really taught me a lot. For one, there's a lot of nonviolent criminals charged with felonies in the system. As far as I'm concerned, the least of which should be marijuana users and more importantly, medical users. I know the federal government claims that they don't go after medical users, and from my experience, I know that that's false. You know, it's really a waste of resources and a waste of money to go after cannabis in general, let alone people that benefit from it.
Dee Dee, it's a lonely time when your loved one is behind bars. Tell us how you feel today.
From the time I went and picked my husband off, it's honestly like a weight has been taken off my chest. I am an ill person, and we went 2 weeks without any income. Had to take on the role of a single parent for those 2 weeks, and every day my symptomology had really gotten worse. My doctors were growing very concerned. I would like to really thank Judge Russo. You know, since we haven't been to trial, many people, politicians, friends, family, coworkers, people from medical organizations had written the judge on our behalf. And once she learned the circumstances of our case, it really was an act of compassion and mercy for him to, for her to give him the bond hearing and send him back home.
Name that sound. This week we have a special quiz for you. Can you name that sound? It's a sound heard by more than 10 million U.S. citizens. Every 42 seconds, an American hears that sound. And I guess the real question is, why are they hearing that sound? Well, take your guess. We've only got a couple seconds left. It's for using the one drug
that has never killed anyone. Yes, that sound is what over 700,000 pot smokers hear each year. The slamming of the cell door. Time's up. Every 42 seconds. But I suppose it's no big deal, huh? On a local level here in Houston this week, we had a young lady step up and talk to the Houston Chronicle about how she uses medical marijuana for multiple sclerosis.
MS affects me. I have tremors. I have spasticity. One of the ways, I've got a neck tremor, a head neck tremor. I have, right now my right leg always feels like somebody's pulling on it. It's a cramp type spastic feeling. And the last year I've had a whole lot of problems with my left side. I'm losing the ability to really function with that side. I have been told that they can install a baclofen pump, a pacemaker on my bladder, a nerve block that would completely render my left arm useless, and they've suggested chemotherapy to slow the MS. So that is what I'm up against on a daily basis. I really am in a lot of pain, and I try not to be a burden on other people. I feel I really need to fight for my, not only for myself, but for many of my friends with MS. It's a cruel disease. It's a deteriorating disease, and I want to be a voice before I can no longer be a voice.
For hundreds of years, marijuana has been known for its ability to fight the pain and spasticity associated with multiple sclerosis. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Loss of balance, bladder and bowel control, cognitive difficulties, depression, fatigue, muscle weakness, numbness, tingling, pain, spasticity, vision changes, sexual dysfunction, and liver failure. Time's up. The answer, Avonex, approved by the FDA for multiple sclerosis. This morning, a young mother and U.S. citizen was forced to turn herself over to Canadian authorities to be sent back to the United States for her part in a marijuana grow operation.
I'm Renee Boget, and I'm right now living in Vancouver, B.C., and fighting extradition from the United States for medical marijuana charges that I have there. And I face a 10-year mandatory minimum to life sentence. I have to surrender myself to the Vancouver authorities, and I go into a courtroom, and the judge decides whether or not to release me on bail pending our appeal. In 1997, I was working for a man with cancer and a man with AIDS, and these two men were writing a book on medical marijuana called How to Grow Medical Marijuana, and they had a medical marijuana research garden, and everything they were doing was legal according to Proposition 215, which was the California law. I was actually hired to illustrate their book, and I had just graduated from college, so it was my first freelance art job. Unfortunately, the federal government decided to ignore the state law legalizing marijuana, and they went in and arrested my friends. And since I was there the day of the raid, I was charged with everything they were charged with, and that was some heavy federal charges: conspiracy, cultivation, intent to distribute, and possession of marijuana. Basically, my lawyer, he didn't feel he could save me from a 10-year mandatory minimum to life sentence, which they had over me. So there was no way I was going to help the authorities to imprison my friends who were seriously ill as well. So my lawyer recommended that I flee the country. And so I soon after that, fled to Canada, where now I'm applying for refugee status here and fighting extradition from the United States.
Now, John Walters and many others in the U.S. say that they don't go after medical marijuana patients and providers, but that's just not true, is it?
No, not at all. Definitely, it's a war on marijuana in the United States and a war on sick and dying people. And they, you know, the authorities are definitely interested in putting marijuana patients, caregivers, and doctors who prescribe and recommend marijuana into prison. It's really more of a profit-driven more than anything else. They just want to fill up the prison systems, and I think that they see marijuana as a threat, a financial threat, especially to pharmaceutical companies, et cetera. It's definitely a horrible thing that's going on, and in the meantime, sick and dying people aren't getting their medicine, and some of them are getting even sicker, and some of them are even dying, like our friend Peter McWilliams.
Well, Renee Boget, I wish you the very best. Here's hoping that we can do a more in-depth interview here in the coming days.
Yes, that would be wonderful. Hopefully I will be free during my interview and not in prison here.
In case you don't recall, last week the Supreme Court ruled that federal drug laws trump state drug laws. And who would disagree? We can't allow the states to ignore federal standards and rule as they see fit. The federal government must have control. But not everybody sees it that way. This week, a few dissenting voices attempted to undercut the Supreme Court's decision with an amendment to an appropriations bill that divvies money to the Justice, State, and Commerce departments. The amendment would have prohibited the Justice Department from using money to prosecute marijuana patients. But guess what? It didn't pass. In fact, it was crushed by almost two-thirds of the House. So that settles it. First the Supreme Court, and now nearly two-thirds of the House agree that regardless of your malady, and regardless of the laws in your state, if you smoke marijuana, you belong in prison. And we will fund programs to ensure you get there. We will have order. This has been Winston Francis with the official Government Truth.
This is a Drug Truth Network editorial. Drug prohibition means a great deal to millions of people. Welcome to the USA, land of the free, rich, and home of the brave, liars. Fake ignorance on the subject of cannabis flows from the halls of Congress like a raging river, swollen with the millions of lives it has destroyed, churning with hatred and deception, and bearing the harvest of billions of dollars each year to the companies that support the congressmen, that willingly spout the lies and write the laws that empower the cops, that arrest the people who smoke the cannabis, who are otherwise law-abiding citizens. 70, perhaps 80% of Americans are in favor of medical marijuana, yet the Supreme Court, the Congress, and pot-smoking little W want to continue their eternal jihad. The government scheme is unfolding exactly as planned. The administration even told the Supreme Court during the Gonzalez versus Angel proceedings that the drug war was a necessary part of Congress's war on cannabis. All cops, doctors, lawyers, pharmacists, scientists, and psychiatrists who sit idly and watch this abomination unfold are just as guilty, just as culpable, just as greedy, and just as evil as are the 264 purveyors of ignorance in Congress who voted against medical cannabis. My friends, it is now more than ever up to you. Congress is corrupt and replete with crooked dollars. Nobody can defend the policy of eternal drug war in an open public venue. Don't fear the reaper to come. Fear the reaper that walks amongst us. If you lack the courage to do it for yourself, do it for your kids. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful. For the Drug Truth Network and our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Jap dancing on the edge of an abyss.